You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
A psycho dentist is guilty on all charges.
That's one of those. Are you surprised?
I don't even know why they took that to trial.
Because he wanted a trial.
Like, they found the cyanide. Did you hear that he shipped the cyanide to work? And someone saw the box, opened it, and it literally said inside potassium cyanide. And he goes, oh, that's for a project I'm working on. And then he called the person later and he goes, hey, about that box, I didn't want to tell you that I was really hiding a surprise in there. It's not really potassium cyanide. It's a ring that I bought for my wife, and it's hiding in a box labeled potassium cyanide. That was his story. And then she dies, guilty on all charges.
He is bawling as they read the verdict.
Sam,
what are you crying about?
Getting caught? On CNN, they've just gone to coverage from the courtroom. Can we just listen for a quick second?
I want to hear if the judge has anything to say.
Hesitation to commit perjury in the first degree, William Walden. We, the jury, unanimously and beyond a reasonable doubt, find the defendant, James Craig, guilty of solicitation to commit perjury in the first degree. Verdict form, count 5, solicitation to commit murder in the first degree, Nathaniel Harris. We, the jury, unanimously and beyond a reasonable doubt, find the defendant, James Craig, guilty of solicitation to commit murder in the first degree. Verdict form, count 6, solicitation to commit perjury in the first degree as to Cassiani Constantinidis. We, the jury, unanimously and beyond a reasonable doubt, find the defendant, James Craig, guilty of solicitation to commit perjury in the first degree. As to verdict form, count 7, manslaughter, cause or aid suicide, we, the jury, find the defendant, James Craig, not guilty of manslaughter, cause or aid suicide. Let me then turn to the foreperson and ask, is this the verdict of the jury?
Yes.
Do all of you agree with this verdict?
Yes, yes.
At this point in time, you can be seated. Let me ask then if either party wishes to have the jury pulled from the people?
No, Your Honor.
From the defense?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm going to just for...
This is a very common practice in court here, where the defense table will always want the jury pulled to ensure that that is their verdict. He's rather emotionless, James Craig. He is the now former dentist, because he'll probably never practice again.
No, I think his dental career is over as well.
Yeah. He is clearly not happy, but he is sitting down in his chair. He is flanked by 3 female defense lawyers, 2 to his left, 1 to his right. And there's almost like this blank stare on his face. He's wearing a gray suit with a white shirt.
You know, at one point he poisoned his wife while she was in the hospital. And then he texted her and said, hey, because of our history, I'm sure you're probably thinking I poisoned you, but I didn't. That was one of his text messages to her before her death.
Mm. Mm. They are now polling the jury. You might have heard them say not guilty on a charge of voluntary manslaughter. If I'm not mistaken, I may be speaking a little bit out of school here. I believe that is what's called a lesser included charge. So they found him guilty of murder, but not guilty of the lesser included of voluntary manslaughter.
Did you also hear guilty of murder for hire? Because once he was arrested, he tried to reached out to someone in jail or otherwise to get them to kill one of the detectives that was working on the case. And then also tried to reach out.
He realizes these conversations are recorded, right?
Recorded. And then also tried to reach out to someone to say, hey, will you please tell police that I didn't poison her, that she took that on her own because she was suicidal.
Lie under oath. Yeah. The solicitation to commit perjury.
He was trying to convince other people to lie at his trial.
I'm trying to look up the Google searches. I mean, it's just...
You read them yesterday. There were 2 of them that were really bizarre. Like, is there a way to poison someone to death without it being detected? I believe was one of them.
Yes.
And I can't remember the second.
In the weeks before his wife's hospitalization and death, he used a dental office computer to search for undetectable poisons and how to obtain them. He later purchased arsenic and cyanide by mail, which I have to ask how that is even a thing, as well as, quote, how many grams of pure arsenic will kill a human. He also searched, is arsenic detectable in an autopsy? Alongside those searches, he went to YouTube and looked up how to make poison and top five undetectable poisons that show no signs of foul play.
James Craig is guilty of murder in the protein shake trial of his now deceased wife in Aurora, Colorado.
Do you think his attorneys sat there the whole time thinking, dude, what are we even doing?
Well, I do, because, Sam, the evidence in this case
was overwhelming.
She was hospitalized three times and had actually said before her death she thought earlier in the marriage they were having problems. She had said she wanted a divorce. She thought that he had poisoned her.
Huh.
And it was through those protein shakes he was doing it.
All right. Well, he'll be going to prison for the rest of his life, presumably. James Craig found guilty just moments ago. Interesting story here. I know you've really gotten into baseball lately. The Associated Press. Last night, the Baltimore Orioles were playing the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Okay? Baltimore got a doubleheader win against the Toronto Blue Jays yesterday. They played two games yesterday.
Yeah.
But for Sir Anthony Dominguez, he got one win and one loss.
Mm-hmm.
Because he played for the Orioles as a relief pitcher in game one.
No way.
And was traded to Toronto between games. Literally, he was told, hey, you've been traded. Go to the next dugout. He was literally traded to the team that his team was playing yesterday. You just got traded. Go to the next dugout.
It's I don't know that it's happened back to back before like that, but it has happened before.
It has happened before. You're right. You're right.
It happened last season. And I think it was the first time in a long time. Clocked a win and a loss.
Can
Different
I also
team, same day.
Just say without saying that there happens to be a starting pitcher. And if you are in the business of
I thought we weren't
calling baseball games, I'm just going to tell the story without telling the story.
Were we not supposed to talk about this on
there
the radio?
It's his name, Scott. There is a pitcher.
Oh, no.
For the Los Angeles Angels, a starting pitcher who has a name that any commentator almost just can't pronounce, but they have to say it.
Before you say it on the air, write it down on a piece of I'm not losing a license.
It's not similar sounding, but similar in reference to the ice cream that she misidentified.
No, we're not saying that
it's
name.
It's his name.
That's unfortunate. That is his name.
If you watch the replay of him on the mound last night and the commentators trying.
They knew exactly what they were doing.
Scott, they have to do their job. Let's say your last name is Parks.
It is.
And they were saying things like, boy, Parks really struggling out there. You know, you commentate about what you are seeing that the pitcher is doing.
Mm-hmm.
You look up the name of the Los Angeles Angels. I'm just saying I feel bad for anyone who had to call that game.
Let's just say that they said that pitcher was getting stretched.
We're
going to leave it right there.
Can't they give him a nickname? Like,
What nickname would you give the pitcher with that
bizarre
last name?
Her first name, I'm going to be honest. His first name is Yusei. I would just call him by his first name.
Yusei's getting stretched.
So we call Salvi, and his last name is Perez. So when you say Perez behind the plate tonight, they just say Salvi. I think with this specific pitcher, as unfortunate as that last name is, they need to call him by his first name.
Don't forget, there is a college football player out there who plays for Eastern Michigan. First name Noah, last name one letter off from a racial slur.
I know it. I know it, Sam.
Ear.
No, we are not even doing that
I'm
in the year.
I'm not even going to say it.
I know it because I have seen that.
It's not pronounced that way.
No, but when it first came about, commentators were saying, we're not even going to say it. There are certain names they've got to just call this guy by his first, and it's Yusei, I think they just need to call him Yusei.
Oh, my gosh.
I just spelled it for Scott in his ear.
Oh no.
It's awful.
That's his name. That's his last name.
Why would you not, over the course of your family history, change that?
Because he's probably from a foreign country.
Well, okay, so I will tell you this. The pitcher in question for the Angels is from Japan.
Okay.
So in Japanese, that, you know, is probably a common name. Here, I think they're struggling with...
Hang on. I'm looking at the Eastern Michigan lineup
No, do not. It is awful.
Is he still on the team?
That's not funny.
Yeah, he's 18. He's a freshman.
Oh, poor kid.
Why would you not change that name?
Well, and he's a star, by the way. He is not, like, he will be talked about every single game. He is not a bench writer.
Like, he's destined for the NFL kind of good?
No, you know what? You call him by his number. Old number four out there.
I'm just going to call him Noah.
Hang on, I'm looking him up right now.
Oh, my God.
Quick break, 913-586-7. Oh, my God, there he is, number 46. So before we get to our lead story for this hour, TMZ is reporting that the president is currently considering a pardon for Sean Diddy Combs.
Okay. We're going to move on.
Okay. A story here from Channel 5. Investigators are searching for a man who allegedly stalked his ex-girlfriend to a Kansas City bar and shot a friend that she was talking to in the parking lot. Jackson County court records filed on Monday of this week indicate that Ivory Bridgewater, age 25, of Kansas City, has been charged in connection with a near-fatal shooting. A probable cause statement filed by the police department revealed that around 10:30 on Friday, Monday night, law enforcement officials were called to Waldo Social at 74th and Broadway.
Hugely popular bar.
With reports of a shooting. When first responders arrived, they said they found a man on the ground with an apparent gunshot wound to his back. He was taken to the hospital with injuries that could have taken his life. He is currently alive. Investigators say that a witness told them that Bridgewater, the woman's ex-boyfriend, had recently begun to stalk her. He allegedly placed an AirTag in her car.
There it is.
And would follow her to random places. Let me read that sentence again. He allegedly placed an AirTag in her car and would follow her to random places.
According to the probable cause statement, the ex-girlfriend had ended their 12-year relationship about 3 months ago. They were together 12 years. She ended it 3 months ago and then started to report stalking behavior, including an Apple AirTag allegedly hidden in her car.
How did she know?
Well, because I think in some cases your phone will pop up that you've got something following you and you find it.
Okay.
And anyone that is trying to flee a domestic violence situation will tell you they have started warning all women look through your stuff. If you keep going out to dinner or going out with girlfriends and suddenly you look up and Crazy McCrazy is right there, start looking to see if you have some sort of GPS tracking device in your car that somebody slipped in your bag. And it doesn't just have to be an AirTag. It could be anything, right?
But what would be – I've always found this fascinating, I guess, for lack of a better term. What would be the point in stalking an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend?
Control. It's all about control.
But they're not going to take you back.
Earlier, this scares me to death, Scott. Earlier that day, so listen to this. Before the shooting, police had taken a domestic violence report involving Bridgewater, the man, at his home, and issued a warrant application. As of the last, this was Channel 9 story, says he is still not in custody. Is that true?
Sam, say what you were going to say, and I'll look that part up.
They're not thinking logically. They're blinded by the rage of the fact that the relationship has ended. Okay. Obviously, they know somewhere deep down that stalking them is not going to get them back. But to them, if they can make contact in any way, shape, or form, there might be a chance.
So here we go.
Saying there's a chance.
Yeah. A female witness This is from the Kansas City Star article. A female witness told police she was playing kickball at a park earlier in the day. Bridgewater was also there. The woman identified herself as his ex-girlfriend, telling officers earlier, okay, that the pair had dated 12 years, broke up, they're in communication off and on, but he has been displaying stalker tendencies, i.e., I'm at this park playing kickball, I look up, and there he is.
It is believed he fled the state immediately after the shooting. He is not in custody. He remains at large.
I'm starting to think it wasn't the best idea in the world to start advertising very cheap, very easy to use tracking devices.
Sam, I agree.
Made by the largest technology company, or one of the largest technology companies in the world.
Not to draw a comparison between the two, but it's kind of like these AirTags are kind of like AI. You can see where they could be beneficial, but more often than not, we read stories about how it is detrimental. And is used for ill will, for lack of a better phrase. I can understand why somebody might want an AirPod for your luggage, for a bag, for your purse, even on your own car. If you live in a high crime neighborhood and cars are often stolen, you would put an AirTag somewhere in your car. And it would be easy for you to tell the police, you know, hey, here's where my car is. It was stolen last night, blah, blah, blah. But to Sam's point, it can so easily be used to track people without their knowledge.
We talked about this yesterday with the other domestic violence stories in the stack. The most dangerous time for a woman, and then sometimes by default anyone around her, is when she has left or is in the process of leaving. Mm-hmm. We've seen this with workplace domestic violence. It spills into the workplace where a former shunned spouse or lover shows up with a weapon. Here with Waldo Social, it's all caught on surveillance tape, by the way. This man.
And I love Waldo Social.
I know, I do
fantastic
too.
Fantastic bar.
This man that they cannot find knew that this was going to be on surveillance. He didn't care.
Well, how did he know it was going to be on surveillance?
Because there is surveillance everywhere around there. Mm-hmm. And it backs up what everybody is saying.
They just redid the entire parking lot, too.
You guys know way too much about this bar.
It's
Am I
really,
the only one with a drinking problem on the show?
No, it's really nice. I've been there once with Jamie Monticelli.
913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. Are Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson dating?
Yes, and I like it. Also, I saw something today that said the Remake is one of the funniest things you've seen in a long time.
The Naked Gun.
The Naked Gun remake. And Liam Neeson's in it. Obviously, yep. Pamela Anderson's in it. That's where they met. One of the reviews said it is absolutely hilarious.
Not the remake I thought we needed. By the way, the original came out in 1988. I remember seeing it in the theaters and laughing so hard I about wet my pants.
It's funny.
So anyway, Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson were on the Today Show this morning where they were promoting their upcoming reboot of the Naked Gun classic. And yes, I use the word classic. Have you ever seen it?
It's
so dumb, it's funny.
Very funny.
Anyway, Craig Melvin, the co-anchor of the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie, looks at the two of them as they're sitting on the set, Pamela Anderson and Liam Neeson. He goes, what's the deal here?
Yeah, what's going on here?
You're both single right now. There's clearly a chemistry on display throughout the film. Are you two an item? And Liam Neeson says, Craig. Craig says, what? And then Pamela Anderson says, I don't understand the question. Neeson says, I had never met Pamela before. We met on set and we discovered we had a lovely budding chemistry.
lovely.
As two actors. Neeson then went on, it's like, oh, this is nice. Let's not mold this. Let's just let it breathe. And that's what we did. Says Craig Melvin, co-host of the Today Show. We're watching the beginning of the breathing of a budding relationship.
He just wouldn't let it go, would he?
No. Pamela Anderson has been married 4 times. Tommy Lee, Kid Rock, Rick Solomon, and Dan Hayhurst. Neeson, as you remember, was married to Natasha Richardson, who sadly died in a skiing accident 16 years ago. Okay.
Quoting here from the city of Kansas City, Missouri, after the Family Dollar collapse that killed one and injured a bunch of others.
You are obsessed with this story.
We are not prepared to make any sort of blanket statement on any policy that needs to be reviewed. But of course, anytime a tragedy like this occurs that appeared to be preventable, I think we should hold accountable property owners and business owners who threaten the lives of our citizens. So says City Council member Eric Bunch. Pardon me.
Oh, favorite student front row, Dana Wright, what's up?
While a building owner theoretically should and could care about the state of the building, it was the city that sent an inspector out several days before the building collapsed, killing one and critically injuring.
To look at noxious weeds.
I still cannot understand how an inspector goes out and takes a photo of that building. I don't care what he was there looking for. He could have been there looking for UFOs for all I care. How does someone go out, take a photo of that building, and not see that it is in imminent danger of collapse when the neighbors across the street were saying that building is going to fall down?
I mean, you want to talk about doing the bare minimum.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
I don't see
you.
Any weeds here, but all right, I'll go home.
But what if they were, okay, hang on now, both of you. What if this person was sent out to investigate allegations that they had a roach infestation or a mice infestation?
If you sent me to that building to see if there were roaches inside, I would not breach the entryway because I would look up where the A and the M in Family Dollar were collapsing and say, I'm not going to go in there and we should probably evacuate.
But you said, Sam, talk about doing the bare minimum. Let's say that somebody, and I'm not saying that anybody has done this, but let's say that somebody had called into the city and said, you know, this Family Dollar over here in whatever neighborhood it was in, they've got a roach problem. I was just in there a few minutes ago trying to buy some stuff. There are roaches all over the place. Some are alive, some are dead. And the city sends somebody out there to investigate the roach problem and then also starts taking pictures of noxious weeds outside. That's not what they were sent there for.
Well,
they weren't sent there to look at the
roaches. Roaches aren't going to kill you the way a falling building will.
We're talking about a safety concern, and I'm going to go back to Dana's fantastic analogy the other day. A firefighter is called out to save a kitten out of a tree. And yes, if it's Dana's house, it's safer in the tree than in the house. That's beside
absolutely.
The point.
Absolutely. More likely
a
to live.
A firefighter is called out to Dana's house to save a kitten out of the tree.
Yeah.
He happens to see 15-foot-tall flames coming from the middle of the house and says, well, I got to get the kitten.
That is my analogy.
It works.
Even though the firefighter was sent out for the cat, you would say, oh my gosh, look, the house is on fire. Now, Channel 41 is reporting that the city was alerted Friday afternoon that, quote, the building was tilting.
So if it was Friday afternoon, I have no problem with them not sending somebody out Friday afternoon.
Scott, the 311 complaint said the building is tilting. I just
city
it
workers.
It didn't say there's roaches inside the building. Let's kick this can down the road to Monday. It
that's
said the
exactly
building is
what they said.
Tilting.
City workers don't clock out at 5 o'clock. They clock out at 4:59. You know it, and I know it.
Now, listen to this: the emergency communications coordinator said no one's going to be available from dangerous buildings to do an interview, Channel 41, but did say, quote, emergency concerns should be reported to 911. So let me ask you this, Scott. Had the caller, instead of calling dangerous buildings and codes and 311, had someone called 911, then a police officer is dispatched,
or the fire department.
Yes, a fire department personnel, and then the fire guys would have said,
we're shutting this building down. We're shutting it down.
And again, we need to mention, to remind everybody, it was 9 years ago that a car ran into the front of the building, knocking out the support beam, and they said, hey, you should probably do something about that.
Did they?
No,
clearly not.
No.
And now somebody's dead.
Sadly, and another person is injured.
I think it's totally different when it's safety concerns. And I get the argument about there are different inspectors that have to go out and look at different things. But if there is an imminent safety concern,
that's a 911 call, not a 311 call.
Listen to what else the city council guy said. We have a rapid response team to go out and look at dangerous buildings. Quote, the policy is in place to send out 24 hours a day. So we've got inspectors who can go out and look at dangerous buildings.
Then why didn't somebody go out and look?
Someone is going to have to answer that question.
If it is true that the city of Kansas City, Missouri has staff available, maybe not in office, maybe they have to get called out. What year is this, 1993?
I don't know.
Get paged. If they have people available 24 hours a day, then why was somebody not there Friday night? Why? Somebody writes in and says, the front of this building, the facade of this Family Dollar store is falling down. Somebody is going to get hurt. And they get this report on a Friday afternoon, and they have people who are available 24 hours a day. Then, according to the story from Channel 41, then why was somebody not sent?
That would make the city at least in part to blame.
I don't disagree with you on that.
But this wouldn't even be a story. We would have mentioned it for half a second had somebody not died.
Well, the front facade collapsed.
We would have mentioned it in passing like we did the bricks on Main Street moved on.
You're right. Here we go.
From our reporting friends at KCUR, 2 days before the collapse, a city building inspector was dispatched to the property at 37th and Broadway. Quote, the resident is reporting that the building Family Dollar is slowly tilting, she wrote. She took no action but confirmed what the neighbor saw. Quote, please describe the property issues at this location. In the report, please describe the property issues at this location. Okay. Quote, building tilting. 2 days before the collapse.
Mm. And nobody shut it down?
If the inspector that is there that is writing the report says it's tilting, What else are you supposed to do?
913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. Ooh, I just had a sneezing fit.
Are you going to be all right?
9 sneezes. That's not even a record. The record's 15.
Are we done?
No, I don't know that he's done.
I don't know yet.
Tickle in the nose.
Just had 9 sneezes during the commercial break. My word. Anthony in Kansas City. Anthony, hello.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, yes. My brother works for the code enforcement of the city of Colville in Texas. And I talked to him about this story. And he said the inspector who went out there, even though it's for grass, should have noticed and reported that building, that structure was in trouble, that they're trained to look for other code violations while they're there.
Hmm.
And that's all I had.
Okay. All right, Anthony, thank you for the call. Do appreciate it.
The problem is there's a report. There's a report that says, please describe the property issues at the location. Quote, building tilting.
Yeah, we're now
2 days prior.
We're now looking at this story through a different lens because originally it was thought that somebody had been dispatched out there on Tuesday of last week to a noxious weeds complaint. That may be true, but this person apparently also, to your point, Anthony, was trained and did notice whether it was also part of the complaint about the building or not, that the building's exterior was failing.
I'm going to read this.
And they reported it.
Word for word, as it appeared in the report that KCUR has. quote, the resident is reporting that the building Family Dollar is slowly tilting, she wrote. She took no action, but confirmed what the neighbor saw. Please describe the property issues at this location. Quote, building tilting.
That's pretty much to the point.
There's only 9 city inspectors, by the building inspectors. I saw that this morning. They had funding for 7, and then this year they boosted that to 9. Because we were wondering, is it something like they couldn't get anyone out there? Because 9 people for an entire big old city is not a lot of people.
From the text line, I work for the city. I very rarely clock out on time and work many 24-hour shifts.
And I apologize for anyone we offended. That was before we knew that there was a report that said, quote, building tilting 2 days prior to the collapse.
And to be clear, we're not talking about this because we want the city to be sued.
No.
But there has to be some accountability here.
No, the city's going to get sued.
If you're checking a box that says building tilting, I don't care what time of day it is. Does someone not say get out of the building?
Kent in Gladstone, you get the last word. Kent, hello.
Yeah, I've been looking at the building, and it looks like an old grocery store. I know it wasn't built just for Family Dollar. I kind of want to know if anybody knows the history. It looks like the walls are older than the roof, maybe. Maybe it's been re-roofed.
Kent, the history is a car struck it.
I know that.
That's all you need to know.
And the pillar that was apparently damaged or taken out when the car struck the structure was never replaced. That's on the building owner. That's on the landlord. And the city can't be blamed for that.
No, but the city can be blamed if somebody did truly notice that the building is tilting and put that in a report and no further action was taken. Now, I do think that when you see a building that is failing in that capacity, and we've seen photos before the front collapsed, it's clearly structurally not sound. How that building was not immediately shut down, one would argue, and maybe they don't have the authority. I don't know. But the city inspector who went out there for whatever reason and noticed that the facade, the front door area, was failing and failing badly, if they had the authority to immediately close the building and shut down that business, they should have. If not, they should have gone up the ladder to find somebody who could. Quick break for the news. Dan's got that coming your way in 2 minutes. The telephone number here, if you want to be part of the program at any time, is 913-586-7798. Don't forget to check out the Dana and Parks podcast. It is available anytime you want, anywhere you go. Just go to KMBZ.com.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.